Alohomora, you have opened the wizard version of Shazam. This is episode 2.5. Welcome. Great job, wizards. Okay, I love Harry Potter way too much, guys. I'm currently drinking out of a Harry Potter mug and water out of a Harry Potter glass.
I wish you guys could see her face when she said that. She was just like full of joy, and I got to say the thing.
I get excited, guys. Or afternoon, whatever time you're listening to this, everyone. It is morning for us. This is episode 2.5, and we are going to dive more into the magical version of what Carissa and I can talk about. You know, on our Muggles podcast, we want to make sure we're not revealing anything too crazy. But this is for you. This is for you if you understand the language, and we can reveal some hidden secrets here. So welcome, and we're excited to get started.
Absolutely. We're also going to try and keep for the wizards a small glossary for each episode of information that we talk about and different resources that we mention in case you're a newer wizard and you feel a little overwhelmed if we mention something that you don't know. I know that when I was first getting started into magic, I felt like there was this huge prerequisite of information I needed to know, and nobody would tell me where the course was on that stuff. So we will try to explain things that are a little bit more complicated, but you know, we do expect you are all knowledgeable wizards, so we're just gonna power through, and if there's something you miss, feel free to reference the show notes.
And also, if there's something you have a question on, shoot us an email at shazampod@gmail.com or send us over a tweet at shazampod, all of the above, and we will get back to you.
That's right. We're going to go out of our way to make sure to respond to the Facebook messages and the Twitter messages. We want this to be discussion and not just a question, but if you have something to add. So we're going to offer some stuff from our experience. And luckily, Kayla and I have very different experiences in magic, but that's not the full range of experiences. So if you've done something that is also helpful, feel free to contribute and add to the resource in an ongoing way.
As well as send us over something and you might be featured on an episode.
Ooh, wouldn't that be special?
Wow, special.
So special. What a special, special day. I think Kayla and I are a little giddy because it's early and both full of caffeine.
We did discover we should record podcasts maybe in the morning.
I think so. I don't know. After you edit this, you can decide if this is annoying or not.
Hear it, yeah. I'll let everyone know when we get back. Brilliant. All right, so let's get started. So our episode 2 was all about, the poop of props, or poop about props. And we want to dive more into kind of what that means, for magicians. And so we want to start, with Chris and I just talking about how we so differently approach walk around or strolling magic. So Carissa, do you want to kind of talk about what you do and how you make, strolling your own, your choice of material, your choice of props? And how all of that differs from every other strolling magician.
Well, I think my relationship with walk around magic really started from the fact that I have done some acting and I've done some acting training. I didn't ever go to like a full on course, but any time there's ever been an intensive, I've participated in. In fact, the last time you and I were the groundlings, I was looking around for information on like, do they do like a 2-week intensive? Because I'm just a complete theater junkie and I take every course available to me. And one of the most interesting ones I took that I thought gave me a lot of information about walk around magic was they talked about the difference between acting for film and acting for stage. And I think that that is the dilation that we're missing in a lot of walk-around close-up magic. We have such a gift as walk-around and close-up magicians and even doing bar magic that it's a specific kind of performance that is designed to have a level of intimacy. It's supposed to be for one or just a few people. And there's really no other form of entertainment that is so specifically designed to be that, except for maybe like lap dances, you know, but that's different. And so if you're... also about intimacy. You can cut that if you want.
Nope.
So if your job is to do close-up magic and it's about to have this intimate, specific experience with a single person, well, that's going to feel different. If you've seen any theater actor is trying to do film and they're struggling, it's because they're trying to be too big. They're trying to perform out and beyond the space that they're performing beyond the camera. And you're really trying to perform to your co-star and to the camera in a very small and intimate way, in a way that feels very real. So when I do walk around magic, that's my first step, is I really try to be authentic. And the material I write for my walk around is a lot looser than the stuff I do on stage. On stage, I do extremely scripted material. Then there are chunks of improv that are also, unfortunately, extremely scripted. Even my improv is quite scripted. I'm a little anal in that way. But my walk around is more conceptual. So I think, okay, this is a concept we're going to get into. This is a concept we're going to get into. But I've seen so many walk around performers go up to someone and go, would you like to see a trick? Excellent. And then they go into this trick patter with one person. And if I just talked at you and we were at a cafe, it would be so uncomfortable because you would feel that my presence was unnecessary. And so I never want a spectator to feel that way. So one of the first things I did was I dressed just a little nicer than everybody else there, but in a way that I stand out, but only just a little. Like, I look like I might be somebody famous trying to blend in is kind of the look I go for. But that put me in a position where I couldn't really carry like a pouch. Normally magicians will have a belt with like a card clip and a few pockets. And the first few times I did walk around, I did the same thing, or I had a suit jacket with pockets. And I think I maybe did 3 gigs with a suit jacket before I committed, like, I don't wear a suit jacket in real life. I would never wear this. It is not me. I'm done. And I just set all my suit jackets on fire and I was just done with it. So then what can you do if you're walking around and you're doing walk around and you don't have pockets? So I really moved towards carrying this cute little clutch, and it was a clutch that could hook onto my elbow or could sit on a table. But I always made sure I had one that was bright so that I would remember to grab it when I left the table, because I thought that was very important. If you go to a thrift store, they tend to have a lot of little clutches because women buy them thinking, oh, this will be something I'll use, and then they don't. So a thrift store will have a ton of fancy clutches, so you can get one to match all of your outfits, and then you can gut it. So I just go in with an X-Acto knife and I take out all the compartments, and then I rebuild the compartments in it so that I know what I need. And if I am doing walk around that involves any kind of cards, it's in a clutch. And the clutch I actually use has a little loop on it, and I took the loop off and I put a set of linking rings in there instead. Even though I don't really do linking rings in my walk around, I have it because I would like to do linking rings, and I know enough that I can kind of like do a little bit of it. But I also love that some people have an interest in magic will kind of see it and know what it is and kind of go, oh, that's probably the magician. And I love doing things in my walk around that reference magic, but only for people in the know, so that I can make contact with those people and be like, oh, that guy actually knows a couple card tricks. So when I approach his table, I'm going to get him to show me something. So there's that part of it. And then I've really focused over the last couple of years on trying to do a whole walk around set with just the jewelry I'm wearing. And that's been an ongoing struggle. I would say right now I'm 2 years into what I would think of as a 5-year process. And when that's all done, I really want to publish all that material so that we have it. I taught a little bit of it in the lecture I've been doing in this last tour. I taught all the necklace stuff because I liked the idea that it was feminine, but it was also very conversational. And I think sometimes when we do walk around magic, we forget that that's the tone I think we should be striking. And as a woman, that's easier because I have a lot of practice just going up to people casually and making friends. And I'm not as threatening as maybe a man would be. So I think for me to approach a table that way and be conversational and ask questions about them, it feels more normal, it feels more natural. And then eventually, if they're polite, they'll go, you know, I try really hard to keep the conversation centered around them to create a real sense of intimacy. And then they'll go, oh, what do you do? Who are you here with? And I can go, actually, I'm the magician. You caught me. That means you get to see a trick. I brought 3 things. I have a stunt, I have an optical illusion, and I have a card trick. What would you like to see? And so there's a couple things. One, I'm implying that they've won a prize, so then there's value associated with what I'm about to do. They already like me because I've already asked a lot of questions about them. And then now I've put them in a position where they can't say no because I've given them options. I haven't said yes or no a trick. I've said which trick. And then that also provides them with an opportunity to tell me a little bit about who they are. Who is this person? And then I can cater my magic towards them, because that is such a wonderful benefit of doing walk around magic, is that I can create an experience that's just for this person, that is the best possible trick this person could ever receive. And a lot of the time I'll run up to guys who they just want to know how the trick works. And in that situation, I will fry them And then I will go, do you want to learn one? Because I know that's what they really want. And I'll teach them something really, really simple. And I'm happy to do that at a table, teach them really, really simple things. Or sometimes you'll walk up to a table with guys and he'll just want to mess with you. And then what I do is I do this improvised card trick with a couple of methods that I've layered so that I go, what do you want? Do you want to shuffle the deck? Okay, go ahead. Now what do you want to do? And I just ask them, I ask them to make up the trick, and whatever they make up, I'm like, now what do you want me to do? I can accomplish it. Because those people are deliberately trying to mess with me, and so I want to indulge them in that experience. Whatever experience they're trying to get out of this interaction, I want to play in that playground. Oh, your playground is that you want to be the guy that messes with the magician? Okay, that's what we're doing. You want to be the guy that figures out the trick? Okay, I can reward that behavior. You want to genuinely be fried? I'll reward that behavior. Whatever you as an individual want to get out of this experience, I want to help you get that in a really fun and authentic way.
Yeah, I think I just want to kind of touch upon what you said is that back in the beginning, that I think magicians overall really love being this sort of all-powerful, like, I'm the best thing in your day type person. And that I find that a lot of people, especially now, because audiences and people, they crave an interaction, right? There's a reason that people, are going more towards like virtual reality experiences, because it feels like you're in this experience without leaving your home. And there's a reason that people want to have conversations with you and sit down and like have coffee or brunch and all that. People are craving that interaction. And for you to come up and just get in their face and not care about them at all means that you're not entertaining. And they're certainly not going to remember you. The way that you're going to be remembered the most is if you listen to someone. Mm-hmm. And if they go, yeah, that was really, really fun. That because I got to get to know this person and they got to know me and that we're leaving as friends. And I think that's such an important approach to walk around, as you mentioned, because it's not so much about fooling them with what you're doing with your hands, but it's about the entire experience from start to finish. And that is so, so important now. And definitely something that I also strive for. So I can't agree more. Can you talk, Carissa, a little bit more about the specific props you choose? I think we kind of touch upon this in the episode 2 about the ring on the necklace, but just anything else, the very, like, diving into the nitty gritty of the actual things you carry with you.
Absolutely. So I always carry around a ring and chain piece. That chain can do a bunch of bar bet stuff. The actual ring can do any, pretty much because of the size. I specifically picked one that I can do a lot of fingering effects with it, and I can also do a lot of the larger hoop ring things.
And what does that ring look like? Just so that we can kind of tell people that.
Well, I think I'll take a picture of it so I can actually put it on the podcast. And also, I'm developing a new one because I have a new thing I've been doing lately where I teach. You know how that you always get that guy, especially a guy, who's like, oh, teach me a trick. Well, I've been actually teaching them a simple coding system and then telling him to find me later in the day. And then later in the walk around set, him and I will do a trick together. Well, I'll be like, actually, you know, I actually think, you know, Ken is a pretty decent mind reader. So I think Ken can read my mind. And then
that's
I will
so
code
fun.
Him. It's so fun. Because now instead of this guy who's like, I figured out your trick, he's like, I'm in on it. And so the new necklace I'm designing is going to have all the features that my necklace has. Plus, it'll be a coding system that is a very simple coding system I can use to code to a spectator, a code I can teach in 5 seconds. I'm super in love with it. But yeah, I have basically a ring and chain. I've deliberately picked a ring and chain that feels, for me, for my character, very consistent with the rest of my jewelry. So it is a silver pendant with a brass chain because I wanted contrast between the two of them. And it's got big gemstones on it, so it's really, really girly and pretty. I wear a ring, and I don't use like the men's finger ring. I've learned how to do all the ring manipulation with basically a very feminine ring. And then the other thing I can do with that ring is I do like a himba ring effect where I have like the men's himba ring look, but I have them focus on my ring. So I say, this is my ring. And then I borrow two other rings and switch out the himba ring, but all the heat is on the ring I started with, which is just a very simple woman's ring. And I found that doing a himba ring where I switch a ring. I switch one of the guy's rings. That's just a general gold band that looks like nothing. And I put all the heat on my ring. And what I do is I make it so that when I switch the rings, the two guy rings I take look fairly similar. And I deliberately take them in a way that neither of them see what it is, so that they assume the, you know, that ring is the other guy's ring. So it's really, really simple. And I can do it in walk around scenarios, and it's really clean and fine because all the heat is on the little ring. And then you can do finger ring rolling, and you can make it appear. You can do a lot of thimble stuff, especially if you get a smaller ring. So there's a lot of work I do with rings. Then I have a piece I'm working on right now with earrings that I'm going to release probably in the next year. And what it is that it's like a little circle gem ring, and I take it off, and it's about the size and weight of a $0.50 coin. Just a little bit smaller, actually. And what I do is I take it off my ear and I turn it into a $0.50. And then the earring is back on my ear. And then now I can go into a coin routine and it feels a little bit more authentic. And even though I've turned it into a $0.50, because it was connected to a trick, it doesn't feel as weird that I'm using $0.50. And so now I can get into trick coins if I want to. And that comes back. Like, I'm constantly taking the earring off and like throwing it and it's back on my ear. And I bring that in as much as I possibly can. And then I've been doing a little bit with these bangles, but I don't have a ton of material with them yet because I've found that the bangles are very clunky. So I think I'm going to switch from the bangles to actually an elasticated bracelet that is a little as wide as a silver dollar, because a lot of men wear watches, and I think an elasticated, gemmy, fancy bracelet, I can hide coins in it really easily. And so that's how I'm retrieving my coins right now. So I may be abandoning the bangle angle and just going with something a little bit different, because not everything I'm wearing has to quote unquote be a piece of magic. It could be facilitating some other trick. So I would say probably with those things I've described, I've got about a half an hour of material, and then I have about a half hour of cards, and then I do some stunts. So I'll put a match out on my tongue, or I'll do like a very classy version of Blockhead with like a skewer that I have an olive on in a martini glass, and do things like that, because I want that spectator to feel like whatever they want is being respected. And sometimes when I go up to a spectator and I'm like, yeah, I've got a stunt, then I've got a stunt, a card trick, and I've got an optical illusion, and all the jewelry stuff I put in the category of quote unquote optical illusions, because it's visual magic. And so it's something that I can make apparently seem like optical illusions, but it's still magic. When I get into the stunt stuff, I still do a piece of magic. So I'll put the match out on my tongue and I'll throw it on the table, and then I'll put the match out in my hand and then vanish the match. So it's very, very simple, but it is still a vanish and is still a little bit like magical. And that's just a thumb tip. I just use a rubber thumb tip and then I can vanish it. And I'll do like 10 matches a night. And you won't see any buildup. I can do probably 40 matches a night before it starts being black enough in there that you can see it on my thumb. So it's a pretty easy walk around bit, and people don't ask for stunts very often when I'm doing walk around. I would say it's the thing that gets asked for about 20% of the time, but when they do ask for it, those people do tend to not care for magic. And so I have something I can do for the people that are like, I don't really like magic, but I'm super into stunts. And that's a good story for them to tell. And then if they go, oh, how'd you learn that? Which they always do. Then I can mention my world record and my Ripley's Believe It or Not stuff. And then it's just one more credibility indicator and qualification. And often I'll end up just sitting at the table telling a cool story, and it's still entertaining, because if I'm being hired to entertain, I'm being hired to entertain. And if what that spectator wants right now is to be listened to, or if what they want right now is a story, then I'm going to make sure that that's a big part of my magic, because I want to give them what they want.
Yeah, I think that's so great. And I just to sort of touch upon as well, the just a general approach to strolling. I love that you ask what experience they want to have. I think that that's really cool. I do not do that. I also don't ever ask if they want to see something. Mm. My approach is I don't approach people. I do not walk up to a group of people. 'Cause what I found is one, and this is, I think, a discussion for like a totally other day, but one, if a group is over half women, the group will disband once I start to do something. Because I think that's a little bit of like the catty woman side of things, where, you know, there's a woman there and she's now taking the attention away from the group, and she's being more entertaining than me, so I'm not into this. I'm just going to walk away. I've never in my adulthood been able to hold a group that is more than half women. I'll do one trick for them, and they feel very disinterested. Unless it's a group that's 100% women, and then everybody's into it. So it's really interesting. It's a really interesting thing that I started just sort of jotting down notes on, which is if there's one man in the group will disband or feel very disinterested. But if it's all women, everyone's really into it. So what I started doing is I just don't approach people. I just sort of walk around the room trying to make eye contact with people while shuffling a deck of cards. And within seconds, somebody will ask me what I'm doing. And in that moment, I'm now invited into their group. And so I have no problem. Then I can, when they'll be like, why do you have a deck of cards? Oh, actually, I'm a magician. Walking around entertaining. Wait, really? Yeah, come over. Done. So now they have chosen that experience. So sort of the same way that you're doing the what would you like to see, they've chosen to have this experience. Now, if they say, oh, that's cool, and then break eye contact, then they've chosen not to have the experience, mm-hmm. and that's totally fine. But then I'm going to linger in that person's area and perform for somebody else, and it will inevitably be, hey, come back over here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a very restaurant-y gig where you walk up to a table and say, want to see something, and they say no. Then you go to the table next to them so that they feel jealous. Just like an old restaurant tactic. And so I just stopped because I just found that it was much more effort to convince someone to allow me to be in their space over them inviting me in. They don't think I've asked them to invite me in, but really I have.
Mm.
I've made eye contact. I've smiled. I've shuffled a deck of cards so that they can see and hear it. And then they're going, what are you doing? Magic. Oh my God, come over here. We love magic.
Yeah. And I think that's a fantastic approach. I really do. I think it's important to be invited into someone's space, especially when you're doing magic that's much more intimate. I think the reason why, I have two similar tactics for approaching, because most of that thing is like once I've already engaged someone, is that one, I will find a group that looks bored. So it's not just about making eye contact. It's like I'm deliberately looking for the people in the room that are the most in need of my services. And then I will pick a woman and I will compliment her on something authentically. I will go, I had to come and talk to you. I was standing across the room and I looked at your purse and it is stunning. Where did you get it? And then I will talk to her and I will try and get her to tell me what she does for a living or what her passion is. And I will try to get her to talk about herself as much as possible without ever saying anything about myself. Because then eventually when she does ask me, there's a huge social power vacuum where she's like, wow, this person has listened to me a lot. I'm going to listen to them now. And so they really invest themselves in my magic. Because I totally, the thing, as you were saying, that thing with the, you know, a group that's more than half women with some men in it, it's a bit rough. I completely felt that when I was not doing walk around, when I was doing walk around in my suit. When I was doing walk around in my magician uniform, I very much felt like I was coming across as like, hey, I'm one of the guys and I'm going to do something in this environment that you can't do.
Yeah, if you walk around in a magician suit, you're no longer a person.
Yeah, exactly.
You're no longer a threat if you're not a person.
I think when I started walking around in my evening gown with all my fancy jewels and people are looking at me being like, she's up to something, but we don't know what it is. I think that, and then I walk up to you and I choose you and you've been looking at me all night being like, who is she? And my first thing I do is go, you've been interested in me and I'm super interested in you. Then that interaction feels, I think, very powerful. Because you're totally right. I could walk up to any group of all guys and just take over. But if it's a mix, I think there's a different social dynamic there.
Yeah, absolutely. As well as one of the things, so I open with crazy man's handcuffs always. And the reason is I feel that, so I always ask if there's a woman in the group, I always ask that woman to hold the rubber band to participate in Crazy Man's, because that the same exact thing that you're doing mm-hmm. is I can ask her, you know, what's your name and what, you know, what brings you to this event? Oh, fantastic. Can you hold out your hands like this? Blah, blah, blah. I can ask her some questions. And then now, because she's holding the rubber band and then I go on the her side of the rubber band to do Crazy Man's handcuffs, I've been invited into her space. And she and we are working together on something, as well as in the routine I do, which is, you know, is also a standard Crazy Man's, is that she does the last pull. So I say, I'm going to trap you. You're the magician. So now when she's done, we all applaud her. And it's the same thing as complimenting her, complimenting the woman with the purse. It accomplishes the same goal, because now we are applauding her for her efforts. And she's awesome. And so now we're on the same page. We're equal. And then I will go into, this is a piece I actually learned from John Reed, where I then go into, I have a napkin, just something that I took from the bar, and I make a napkin rose. But as I'm doing that, I ask everybody their questions about themselves. Where are you from? What brings you here? What do you do for work? What's your, you know, oh my God, you have a dog, what kind? Like all that stuff. And I make the rose and I give it to somebody in the group. And then at the end of the set, I close with, I take the rose back and then do a split, and I split it into two and give the second one out as well. And that's something that John Reed had does in his restaurant stuff and teaches in his lecture. And I absolutely implement that in the walk around, because then it's, that just adds an extra level of intimacy. I get to talk to you, which is accomplishing, you know, everything that we're basically accomplishing the same goals, just different, in different ways. I get to talk to you, listen to you, relate to you, and give you a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we need to realize, you know, I really want this podcast to be useful for all magicians, but there are certain things that I think do not get discussed in other spaces because there's not a lot of women. And so I love that right now, you know, this information is useful to everyone, but it's valuable to talk about the fact that in our media, we tend to try to convince women that they're all in competition with each other. So when you walk into a group of women and you are paid to be there and you've dressed up and you have a sense of authority and you have material, like prepared material, it is reasonable based on the way society has constructed our relationships between women for those women to be like, who are you and are you taking the one spot that is available to us? Right? Because sometimes there's only, you know, sometimes it feels like in environments that there's only one token girl allowed. And so when the other girl shows up, you kind of go, get out of here. This is my spot. I fought to be here. I fought to be interesting. I fought to be valued. And so I think when you come into a space, what you and I are both accomplishing in very different ways is helping that person see that we haven't taken away any of the value that was there before. We still value them. We're still interested in them. They haven't lost anything by having us there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to maybe just share my prop choice as well.
Yes.
I am not a builder like Carissa, so I do not build my own props well at all, and really should just not be allowed to do so.
Don't let me build stuff. That's your button.
Yeah, the building stuff is not my thing. I turn to people like Carissa for help. That is not what I do. But what I do enjoy doing is using props that are around or props that look very normal and doing crazy things with them. So I'm a really big rubber band person. I used to be that kid where I wore like 100 rubber bands on my wrist for absolutely no reason, but it definitely made me feel cool. In a walk around setting, I wear a bracelet and I wear 3 rubber bands. So I wear 2 for the trick, 1 as a backup. And then I have a rubber band ball in my bag. So I do have more, but I wear 3 on my wrist because I refuse to be that magician. And if you are listening to this and you currently have a wrist full of rubber bands, just think about your choices. So if you're at home, totally fine. If you're on your way to your gig, just think about your choices.
Yeah. Think about what Zsa Zsa Gabor would say. She would say, take off one accessory, darling. And you know, 15 rubber bands is too many accessories.
Ah, just like enough to be hidden by your watch is totally great. You can handle it.
Any more light than that, and you look like a traveling office, Max.
That's awesome. Traveling office mix. That's fantastic. I also choose to use, I use rubber bands that are from Joe Rhinefleisch because they are very brightly colored, and I always use clean, fresh ones because that's important. Magicians use clean props, and they're bright colored, so they're fun. They're also latex-free, which is very important now, as well as they just last longer and they're great. So I highly recommend, we'll put up a link to Joe's website so you can check out the rubber bands. And they last super long. So I've got three of those on my wrist, ready to go for the show. I sometimes color coordinate with what I'm wearing as well, with the rubber bands, because they come in fun colors. And I carry, so one of my biggest pet peeves about magicians is the magician that has everything in their pockets and you can see that they have everything in their pockets. Mm-hmm. If I can see the clip that is holding five decks of cards on your belt, I immediately hate you. As a spectator, as an audience member, I immediately go, who the heck is this kid or adult? Why are you making these choices? And you look like a buffoon. And also in your back pocket, you've got four more decks of cards. You've got linking rings jingling in your jacket pocket. You've got a wrist full of rubber bands. You've got coins coming out of every, like, just stop. Just take a moment. Pick a trick. Stop. I don't need you to deck switch every time you do a trick. Then, so for me, I used to just put a deck of cards in my back pocket and walk around. But what I notice is that, like, because women's pants are tighter, you can, I have this giant square bulge in my back pocket, which is weird. So what I started doing is I've got my three rubber bands on my wrist, and then I have a small purse, a small handbag hanging off of my shoulder. And what I've done is there's a magnet in the handbag and a magnet that's taped to my shoulder. I don't like to alter costumes because I can't choose a costume. I can't choose what to wear. And so I always make it different. So I just tape a magnet to my shoulder, and then I put the purse hanging from my shoulder. That way the strap doesn't fall off. And it's usually on my right side, and there's a reason for that, and I'll explain in a second. And then when I go, basically the bag is sectioned off. So there are cardboard sections in the bag where I've got sections for cards, and specifically it will say, this is Chicago opener, this is a stacked deck, this is whatever else. And I know which deck is which. And then I have my rubber band ball. I might have some coins. I might have like a sugar packet that's gimmicked that I made or something like that. And that just sits on my side, as well as I have inside of the bag, I have that second napkin rose. And it's either in the bag or depending on my costume, if it can fit underneath a jacket, then I'll put it underneath my jacket, which is how John Reed originally designed it. Or I have a dress where I have a couple dresses that have folds in the front. And that's really cool because then I can turn and the fold, because my hand will just sort of go into the fold, but the napkin rose is underneath that fold in the dress. And because of how it's designed, you never see it, which is really, really cool. Or for the most part, it'll be in the bag. And so then I can very easily, as my hand comes down, my hand just goes inside of the bag naturally because it's at that point. And I can take the napkin rose back, steal the second rose, and do the split, which is really great. And so I just put everything in the bag, and then I really don't have any complicated props. I can do 3 hours worth of different magic with rubber bands and cards. Like I have enough material to cover plenty of walk around with that. I just bring a lot of backup stuff, and then the napkin rose. But what I do love doing is if I have the opportunity to sit down at a table with people, man, do I lap. Do I laugh like there's no tomorrow? I will take, and this is a true story, did a corporate event in Boston where I would sit down at a table, and I go, okay, we need to use the table, so I'm just going to move a couple of things. And what I would do is they had these giant pitchers, but they were the ones, not the big ones with the handle, they were like the hourglassy shaped ones. They had, right, like, you know, subtly hourglassy shaped. So they were tall and thin, but with a good handle grip of where you could hold the neck of that bottle, and then pour it out, right? So I would do this. So basically I would take these bottles. There was one of iced tea and one of water on every table. And so I would take them and say, okay, we just need to clear some space. And in clearing space, I would very nonchalantly put them on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they also had a centerpiece that was this giant lantern with a candle.
Oh my goodness.
And so I would take that and I would just put that on the ground. Meanwhile, they have these big dinner napkins. So I start to go through the standard salt shaker through table routine, which mm-hmm. if it's done well, I know I learned it from the Disney Channel when I was 8, but if it's done well, that routine is so good. And so I would have everybody, you know, I would do other stuff and then I would end with the salt shaker through the table and it would go through, I would catch it underneath the table, put it back on the table. And as I would catch it, I would load my lap with one of the water mm-hmm. jugs. And I would put the salt shaker on the table. And then I would say something like, but you know, even though the salt shaker goes through the table, and then I would steal that water jug through the dinner napkin and be like, it's crazy where that water came from. Boom. Now I've got this loud bang on the table from the water jug. Everyone is like, wait, what? And then I would say, shoot, maybe we need the iced tea. Boom, iced tea. And then the last moment was the lit lantern, which was still lit.
Holla.
And then I immediately got hired back for the next event. So that was really, really great. So I love more having the opportunity to borrow objects or use what's around. You know, again, similar idea to you, which is very natural props, organic props that make sense to me as a human being and make sense to the environment that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And to use those to create what feels like and what most likely is a once-in-a-lifetime experience, because those, you will not have those same people say the same things in the same space, surrounded by, you know, the same environment ever again. Mm-hmm. And so who knows what's going to happen? So again, touching back on your point about like the over-scripted, you know, hey, you're one person, here's my script. No, this is an intimate, enjoyable, unique experience. And it needs to feel that way every Absolutely. Time you approach a group for a walk around.
I love that you do the napkin rose because that I think is such a, you're right. It's such a wonderful moment. And I love the way that John Reed teaches it. Since touring with him, I actually, so I have a clip on the inside of my undergarments that sits under my dress. And I normally put a paper rose in there for the finale for this singing routine I do, the Beauty and the Beast routine. And after seeing him do that, I was at an event and in Vancouver doing an hour of walk around. And on the centerpieces of all the tables, they had these daisies. And so I took 3 daisies and I put them into the clip. And I would walk around to the tables and I would just split daisies into 2 daisies.
That's so
out
great.
Of nowhere. And it was totally based on John Reed's concept, but it's exactly what you said, where it just felt so improvised. And it was just like a nice silent moment where I would do a card trick. And sometimes it takes people a minute to react when you're doing something really amazing. And so if they give me that space where they're like, what just happened? I'll go, this is okay, take your time. And in that time, I would reach out and take a flower and palm off the other one. And after they were done clapping, I would just split the flower into 2 flowers and I'd hand it out to the ladies like it was nothing with no patter because they weren't already clapping over the first half of it. I think that kind of stuff is great. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of the time when I'm talking to some magicians about like working on material, a lot of the time they'll be like, oh, you should do stuff with flowers and fans and feathers and girly things. And often that's garbage, but sometimes it's not garbage.
I love it. We're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor. I'm just kidding. I really have to go to the bathroom.
Okay, cool.
Over here. Pause. Hey, Carissa. Let's talk about our like setup for our stage shows.
Let's do it. So, Kayla, what is it about specifically the way you set up your stage show that you think... I mean, obviously, I think you and I are going to be both reflecting on the fact that we don't have pockets. So the way that we set up our stages is going to be inherently different.
Yes. So I actually do, because I wear a jumpsuit when I perform, because I love jumpsuits. They're basically pajamas. I do usually have pockets in those jumpsuits, but because it's a jumpsuit and I am a woman, they are still on the tighter side. So it's not like I can have a holdout or have a prop hidden and then easily change it, or like a deck switch in those pockets is not possible because you can see one deck of cards in the pocket. So I sometimes will keep one deck of cards in that pocket if I need to, but everything that I use is on stage. So if you look at my show, I've got three tables, two chairs, and an easel with a whiteboard. So it feels very big, but really it's all, everything fits in a carry-on suitcase, which is awesome.
I hate you. I'm so jealous.
I do my best. there's a table very far upstage right that is literally just holding each trick individually. So you don't notice it. It's not a big deal. But I do not hide things in a box or in a briefcase or anything like that. It is just out on a table. But I don't have a lot of things. So I have a box and I have a tray with some envelopes on it, and a couple of other small things on the table. But it's not intrusive. Then I have my working table. So I bring props from the back table to the table that's downstage to then perform that material. And then on the opposite side, on far upstage left, I've got a table with four wine glasses on it for a psychometry effect I do about bartending. And that just gets its own table. It's easier to just give it its own thing. And then when I need it, I go and grab it, bring it up. Everything feels very natural because I'm always moving. When I perform, I'm very movie. So I don't need to necessarily stand still and open my briefcase in a suave, debonair way. I'm just like a goofball, so I'm moving everywhere. And then I've got my easel downstage left for some like callback effects and things that, you know, with my whiteboard. And then the two chairs for my torn and restored heart routine, which are center stage, just right in the middle. But my tables are draped in a black crushed velvet tablecloth that creates an hourglass shape, because I tie the center with a gold rope, which relates to my gold rope fiber optics routine that we talked about in episode 2. So the gold rope is throughout. I have my box that holds my cards for the one card effect I do in the show is painted slate gray, and it's got a gold rope club on the front. So it relates to the card effect that I'm doing with the six of clubs. And that sits on the back table and then comes to the forefront when necessary, but it blends in really nicely. And then my costuming is, I usually wear a brightly colored jumpsuit. So it's a blue jumpsuit. And then I have a crushed velvet paisley patterned black jacket that sits on top of it with these kind of red, blackish red heels, which is really fun. And there's a lot of wood also.
Do you have a picture of this that we can put up on the podcast?
Yeah, it'd probably be better just to put up a picture. yes, so I do, yes. What's also really cool, just as a side note, all my tablecloths have servants in the back. They were actually partially co-designed by my mentors and directors, Christian and Catalina, and myself, and then made by Lynetta Welch, our good friend, in Las Vegas, who's just the most brilliant magic seamstress, also just like brilliant magic creator and problem solver that there is. And so Lynetta made these tablecloths for me, which are just beautiful. And so they have these servants in the back. So as soon as I'm done with a trick, it goes in the servant and it's gone. So that's a really nice aspect of the show, so that things don't get crowded up. As soon as they're done, they just go and they're not thought about anymore. And yeah, so that's sort of that. My props are very, very simple. I've got envelopes, a whiteboard, cards, the wine glasses. Everything is very, very simple. There's nothing too crazy going on. Everything is more about I focus highly on the performance aspect, so I'm not doing anything big and crazy. Certainly not doing flowers and silks and all that jazz. And so, yeah, that's sort of my stage setup. How about you, Carissa?
I love what you said here about, like, making sure that everything matches and putting that little bit of a touch into it. So my look of my stage, because my character is extremely clowny, like big, I wanted the stage to feel opulent and yet minimalistic. So I built my own table that collapses, it folds in half and it folds down, but it's extremely, I didn't pick like a flimsy base. My base is steel, it's heavy. I can't fit everything in my show in a carry-on. In
fact,
everything's oversized. Well, I think for me, there was a lot of value in making sure that the table was really stable. Yeah. So that my character could lean on it and put a lot of her weight on it. And I wanted everything, there's something in the character that is very strong, and I wanted that reflected in all the props. You're right, I probably could sit down and create a carry-on size show.
You don't need to.
But it's just not. So this table is, you know, it's steel, it's big, it's got a wheel base, but it's basically a base that originally had a small illusionette on it. It's huge. But it does fit down into a piece of checked luggage. And then the top piece folds up. And then I went out and I found, actually my dad salvaged this fabric for me. I'm really into repurposing. So all of the wood in all of the stuff I build is usually repurposed in most of the fabric. We found this blue gold fabric and the stool was upholstered in it. And I built a tablecloth for the main table. And what I did was I took all of my props and I measured them and I built boxes for them with lids. And then those boxes were during the performance fixed to the back of the table. So basically what happens is I fly out with a piece of equipment. I have everything packed away in their boxes. I take everything out of the boxes. I fix the boxes to the back of the table. And then everything goes back in those boxes so that I have basically everything in my suitcase ends up on the stage. Everything gets used. And the tablecloth is upholstered in that same blue gold fabric with the gold tassels on the end. And then the thing that I did that I really loved is that I took my close-up mat, because a lot of what I was doing required kind of a close-up mat, and I put it underneath the tablecloth. So I still had that squishy feeling, that, like, nice texture, but it wasn't clearly a close-up mat. And for Lucy, I didn't want that. I wanted it to be a lot more simple. And so all the fabric on stage is the same fabric. All of the edging on everything is the same. It's one stool and a little side table and the one big table that's very hefty. And again, everything is designed to be very strong. I can lean on anything. I can throw my body at something and it won't go anywhere. But I also love that when I'm performing something, everything appears from behind the table, in my opinion. It's not like I'm making it appear, quote unquote. But if you saw, I think Kayla, you saw my act at the castle, and everything kind of came out from behind the table. But even when I watch the video back, I think, where? You know, like, it's not really clear where that stuff is coming from. And that's what I wanted, because I wanted even the appearance of stuff to be a joke. So every time something comes out and I reveal it, there's a bit or a joke. And for me, if it was already sitting out, it robbed me of that opportunity. And I love the way a stage looks when it's nice and full, but I think Lucy fills the stage so much that's already happening, whether or not I've got stuff behind me. In the touring show, I had a second table behind me with my bar that I made look like my bar. And moving forward, I think I'm probably not going to do that. Because I like the look of the simplicity of just like, here is a table and here is a stool and this is the show. And then when Lucy comes out, she fills the space. Although this year I am thinking about having a red carpet, like having my butler roll out a whole red carpet and like walking the red carpet, and then making that an ongoing gag. So I may be touring with a heavy ass table and a giant heavy carpet. I hope not, but it seems to be going that way. So I think one of the things to consider when you're staging is you want to figure out what your values are as a performer and also the way you're going to move. So my table is about the height that a bar table would be, because I don't ever want to look down and have you miss my eyes. I never want her head to move down too much. So I wanted to create a table where if I can look through the props of the audience, and in order for me to do that, it had to be a certain height. And I really judged it by like putting my elbows on the table and I wanted to feel comfortable. So I think that it's valuable when you're setting up your main stage, to not just think about colors and not just think about fabric and not just think about, like, do you want the stage to feel full or do you want it to be more minimalistic? I think it's also valuable to think about the way your character or you as a performer would interact with those props. Do you have to bend down to pick something up? I remember watching Tim Ellis the week that we were at the castle, and I came and saw his show, and he has to bend down behind his case to get something. And he was like, do you have any notes? And that was my only note, because I found it so distracting that this grown, powerful man, this confident man, had to kneel down as if you would to a child. And it just felt like it was a piece of it that had been not considered. And I would have preferred to have had that whole thing built in a way that he didn't have to lean down.
Yeah.
So, we are going to do a quick segment called Brain Downpour. Not only are we going to do a quick brainstorm to show how both, how basically in regular routining, when you do any kind of magic stuff, you do a quick brainstorm to figure out what your take on something would be. But this is a brain downpour because it's going to come out of nowhere. I have a few ideas for magic tricks, and I'm going to pitch them at Kayla, and she's going to tell me how she would do them in her character, and she's going to do the same, and we're going to try. We're not really trying to stump each other, but that is what's going to happen.
Yes. Let's do it. So let's just start with sort of, okay. We're going to do some basic things first. Chris and I have discussed a couple of these already, so we just want to share that with you, but then we're going to stump each other, or not stump each other, but we have some tricks and props and things that neither of us know, or one of us doesn't know about. So Chris, can you first touch upon how you might use a deck of cards for you?
For me, well, I actually designed my own deck of cards recently, which is an inspiration deck called the Spark Deck, and for me, when I was doing walk around with it, it felt very authentic to me, because when I talk to people, I talk a lot about inspiration, and I really refer to myself as an artist rather than just a magician, and the Spark Deck allowed me to do that. So it's a deck of cards that has a whole bunch of different ways you would change your act and the ways that you would evolve, and it says things like, you know, be present or make it real or these things. And so I do a trick with that deck. So for me, and I also do a routine that is with a deck of cards that is a truth or dare deck. So when I'm doing magic as Lucy, I don't like for her to handle cards if at all possible, except for in a walk around scenario. For me, I would prefer her to have things that are still card shaped, so I can do all the standard card stuff, but it's more like games or a little bit, just a little bit different, trading cards, other things. They don't actually have to be playing cards. What about you, Kayla?
So I do a version of Lisa Mena's Cinderella Card de Chou, which is this fantastic thing. We'll post a video of it underneath here. She published it in a Stephen Minch book. And it's just fantastic. And the way I do it is I printed my own deck of cards. On the back is my logo, because I give them out at the end. So marketing. And then on the front, my routine is how, because my business is called Magic and Heels. And it's about how, you know, heels can make you feel powerful or sexy or what, you know, different, like really positive words. And on the front, front of the cards are these words that I'm saying. And so half the deck are positive words on how wearing heels makes you feel and look. But on the back, on the other half are negative words. So heels can be painful. You make your feet sore. You can be injured, all that stuff. And then I go into the routine with these positive and negative words on how heels make you feel. So on the outside, heels make you can look really powerful and sexy. But on the inside, heels actually really hurt your feet. And that's the routine. So I printed this deck of cards with these words on it.
I love it. So you don't have to limit yourself to existing card tricks, or if there's an effect you like, you can always grow, and it's so easy and cheap to have your own cards printed, so it's really worth looking into it. I would recommend makeplayingcards.com. They're great. They're super great.
Totally agree. I have a friend who just created a routine, which is really cool. It's a Chicago opener, but with Polaroid pictures, because she's a photographer. And so we created this routine for her where the Polaroids then become developed. You know, in the context of Chicago Open Air. Super
That's
easy.
So cool.
Makeplayingcards.com did it.
Shall we try to stump each other?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, do you want to start or should I start?
I'll start. I'll ask you first.
We should remind the audience, we do not know what these are. We have picked ideas for each other that are challenging, and we're going to try to do them. We're going to basically try and make up a routine on the spot based on these effects. So please forgive us.
Okay. One for you, Carissa. Come up with an idea for the sympathetic cards.
Okay. That's a great one. What has not been done? So sympathetic cards is where something that happens to one deck ends up happening to another deck, usually kept in isolation. So what would that look like? What would that look like? Okay. What about if you did something like, I'm trying to think for Lucy. What if you did like a drink menu? So they are cards that you would normally have in like a recipe book for drinks. And so like there's a martini, this is for my character, a martini and an old fashioned, all these different drinks. And they get shuffled up because this is the order that you're going to drink them so that you don't throw up. And, and so you get them shuffled and then they end up in the same orientation. And if they end up in the same orientation, then nobody throws up.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I love that. I had a panic attack halfway through that. I'm like, this is a terrible idea. Okay.
That was great, Carissa.
Kayla, are you ready?
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I actually might, I just wrote that down. Like, maybe I will perform that. That's a cool idea.
I support you.
Okay. Kayla, how would you do drink in the shoe? So that it was yours and original.
A drink in a shoe?
Yeah.
Just like producing a drink in a shoe. Okay. So in college, I mean, I was a huge athlete my entire life. And, in college, because you're just doing so many sports all of the time, and it gets really exhausting and my feet cramped all the time, which is a true story. So I'd be playing a game of basketball and I'd be like, coach, take me out because my feet are cramping. And when that happened, our athletic trainer would always give me a giant bottle of Gatorade. And so I might use that idea to then produce a Gatorade out of a shoe.
I love it.
Success.
It's relatable. It's great.
We did it.
We did it.
Okay. Carissa.
Oh my goodness. I'm so terrified.
Tell me how you would do in your costume for Lucy. So in your dress, no pockets.
Okay.
A full SpongeBob routine.
Oh my god. Okay, so I have a little advantage because I am currently working on a SpongeBob routine for Lucy.
Ah, darn, didn't stump you.
So, you know how they have those like makeup sponges now that are like funny shapes? So I keep finding these like funnier and funnier shapes. Like there was one that I found that's like the shape of a turd, and there's one that looks like just like the head of a penis. And they're just commercially available, like makeup sponges that are in weird, stupid shapes. And so I have this idea of doing a routine where like, I'm constantly producing just out of nowhere, these different shapes and trying to sell them. And it would be totally done out of a Sonata gimmick. So basically, trying to like on the side of my dress, I have slits that go all the way up to basically my hip almost, that kind of where the slit just is where my hand naturally falls. So I can peel a lot of stuff out of the holdouts there and then get them under a Sonata so that I can come up and have my hands be really empty and then just produce out of nowhere these like makeup sponges. I don't actually think I am going to perform that because I worked on it and I like it, but I don't think Lucy would talk about makeup, but there is something there about the fact that these new makeup sponges are starting to look like more, and they don't address it. Like, there are legitimate turd shape makeup sponges. That's exactly the shape, and everybody's just pretending that's completely normal to push a poop shape on your face over and over again, to, like, just dot your face with a tiny squiggly turd, and there's gotta be a joke there. It has to be. There just has to be.
I love that. I love the idea of the makeup sponges. That's super smart.
Yeah, we'll see if it goes anywhere. And if anybody else wants to do that idea, go ahead, because I don't think I'm going to go anywhere with it.
This podcast not only provides you resource, it provides you material.
That's correct. We are so helpful. All right, you ready?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So you, in your current show, you got to put this in somewhere, and it's got to make sense in the linear progression of your show. I want you to do a drawing duplication.
Oh, no.
And it has to be like an original one that suits your character.
Oh no, a drawing duplication. Okay.
You can do this. You can do this.
Mm-hmm. So in the context of my full show, I do a piece about my parents. I'm just talking before I have an actual idea.
That's exactly what I did on the first one. I'm like, I'm just going to say words until an idea happens.
So I do a piece about my parents and about how my dad was a state police officer in Connecticut, and he worked a lot with the narcotics as well as the gambling and, you know, the mafia and things like that. And then my mother was a national champion martial artist. So I do a piece about them. But what actually might be fun is to dive more into my dad's career in that context and say, because this is true, when I was a kid, I used to go on surveillance with my dad. And so we would like go sit outside of a building for a couple hours, which is really cool. Or he would get a call to like go to somebody's house and I would be with him. So we would just go and I would just have to wait in the car. So I like to pretend that I would help him solve crime. And so maybe we're going to solve a crime and we're going to draw the criminal and we have to find the criminal together.
It's not
great. I'm not going to do it, but you get it.
I get it. I think that's great.
Okay. How about one more? Carissa, how would you do the appearing candles, but not the ones, the appearing and vanishing, the ones where it's in your hands, it's like a multiplying balls routine, and you've got one, and they're all connected, right? And it's like that clunky old prop, and you produce the four candles in one hand in the style of multiplying balls, like that prop. How would you do that?
Oh my god, I think I wouldn't, because that's an awful trick. Okay. What could I do as Lucy? Perhaps she is, okay. I have an idea. So what if she's like setting a table to have a date, and it starts with, she takes a candelabra and she peels the sticker off, and the sticker gets stuck on her finger and she can't get it off, to establish like this idea that she can't get it off. And finally she gets the sticker off and she's done. And then she produces a candle elegantly and she puts it in the middle. And then she looks back and there's another candle and she's like, she does that thing where she's trying it. So we reinforce that physical vocabulary from earlier about her trying to get it off. And then in the process of her trying to get it off, it's now two. And then she takes the one off and she goes and it's now two again. And so the idea, like very much that Cardini thing with his cards where it was happening to him. And it all stems from this idea of like, she's become out of sorts because she couldn't get the stupid sticker off this like cheap candelabra she got at Winners or something. And now this whole stupid embarrassing thing. And finally she gets the candelabra set, and it would be fun if like the candelabra gets set. And then as soon as it's all set up, like the thing falls over or something, like there's some final like gag finale of like, well, fuck this. I don't care about this anymore. You're gonna have to bleep that F-bomb.
Yep. No worries.
Oops. Anyway. So I think I would do it that way, like setting up for a date and then everything's going wrong, because we've all been there. I think that's a very relatable narrative, that it's like, I'm trying to get ready, and because I feel rushed, everything is going badly.
I love it. That's great.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
That's so funny that I had billiard balls, but that's too similar, because I was going to, because we knew that there would be some crossover. All right. So I'm going to give you one, and you're going to hate it. I want a Kayla Drescher straitjacket routine. You guys can't see this, but her whole face just contorted into hate. Like, I'm having anxiety from just the face she gave me. Like, I feel like we're not friends anymore.
Oh, no. Okay, a Kayla Drescher.
It's only fair. You gave me a crap trick.
I did give you a crap trick, and thank you for reciprocating. Oh, no. I think it'd be fun to make a straight jacket into a suit jacket.
Ooh.
And do it maybe in that way of, maybe just talking about, like, I don't like a lot of clothes. I know that sounds weird, but that's why I wear a jumpsuit, because it makes me feel like I'm in pajamas. And I don't like dressing up. And I certainly don't, like, want to wear a suit or, you know, a dress or anything like that. So it might be interesting to do something along those lines, like the confines of clothing. Because that's very me, where I really just don't enjoy that style. I just don't enjoy dressing up. And so to do it more in that style of, like, it's actually a suit jacket. With maybe, like, with tails and everything.
But that's cool.
It's just a straight jacket.
Yeah, you could also do it as, like a button-up.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it buttons. Yeah, that'd be really cool. So it buttons fully in the front, and it's got these sleeves and tails. And, yeah, that'd be really fun.
That would be really fun. That's a great idea. I actually think you should do that, because you could also do, like, a necktie as a noose. You don't like it. You hate it.
I'm giving Chris roughly the same face I did when she gave this idea.
Yeah, it's toned down a little bit. Now it's less I hate you and just more judgy.
Yeah. One time we'll do sort of a more video-style podcast where everyone can just see our faces, because I think it might be worth it. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, I think that went really well. Congratulations for the brain downpour. Now we're soaking wet and embarrassed.
Ingenious.
Ingenious. That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
No, I loved it. I actually didn't hear what you said because we were talking at the same time. It was really my fault, and I apologize. So I thought maybe and I didn't run this by you, Carissa, but I thought maybe it would be a really cool idea just to wrap it up, because what really sparked this idea of the episode about poop about props is that comment that was made about a feminine versus masculine wallet. So can we just have a quick, like, give me one or two sentences. How would you do a card to wallet? And then I'll also share my idea as well.
Totally. So I think for card to wallet, you want to definitely make sure that it is consistent with your character. It was like what we were saying. It's not just girl wallet versus boy wallet. It's appropriate. You know, not every girl could have a Hello Kitty wallet. Not every girl could have a pink sparkly wallet. Not every guy can have just a brown straight wallet. You know, everything's going to look a little different. Even if you think about, like, the big names in Magic, Penn and Teller are going to carry a different wallet than Criss Angel would. And we want to see that. We want to see that represented. So I think for Lucy would never carry money. She would never touch money. She could not. So I think for me to do a card to wallet, it would have to be a borrowed wallet. It would have to be someone else's wallet. And in my new show, I have a butler. So I'm actually planning on doing a lot of stuff like I get to kind of tap into some of the masculine things because I can take things from him. So I think if Lucy did a card to wallet, it would be a card to borrowed wallet potentially, or a card to butler wallet. So it's like not only is it a card to wallet, but it's also a wallet I'm not even touching that isn't even mine. It's in my butler's pocket. And then I get the opportunity to refer to, like, oh, it's in my pocket. And then I can look down at my breasts and be like, no, my pocket, you know, Reginald's pocket or whatever. And kind of tap into some comedy there. Because I just don't think that there is such thing as a wallet Lucy would carry. She would never carry money. She would not need it. Who would, you know, she's ineffable. So I feel like as soon as, you know, she's sort of high status and she looks wealthy, but I can never actually say she is wealthy because I think it damages her character. So I think there are certain characters that can't have a wallet at all. And I think Lucy happens to be one of them. What about you, Kayla? What would you do?
By the way, Chris, a great job in keeping it to one to two sentences.
Sorry. Me, long-winded? Hell no. Of course not.
we're just having fun. Really, this podcast is for ourselves, guys. I think I would. I really love the idea of. I don't carry a bag or a purse in real life, but it's not out of the context of my character, as I do carry one and walk around, and I do have a bag as well for my torn and restored heart routine. I think it would be a fun piece to carry a small, like, either a backpack style bag or some, you know, a more me style purse, which would be very plain. And very out of context. It's not important to me. But what is very me is just mess. And so my bag being filled with keys and lipstick, and I don't wear lipstick, but, like, you get the idea. Just like tissues and dog toys and, like, all this stuff. And then at the very bottom of the bag is my wallet, which right now, and I would use a wallet similar to what I have, which is a gray plain clutchy style wallet that I can just carry, put my phone in, and that's all I carry with me all of the time. And that grabbed that style wallet out of the bottom of my disastrous bag, and inside of it would be your card. I would also even consider not using a deck of cards itself, but using, again, words or something that's more, that can more pertain to me in the context of that thing as well. Like maybe the words on the cards are things that can be found in my bag. Or maybe they're blank cards. Write down something that you have currently in your purse, or something that you know, your wife has in their purse, or something along those lines, and you write that down, and that's your signature, and then it ends up inside of my wallet, inside of my disastrous purse. I'm gonna probably do that routine.
That's a great idea.
That's kind of fun. So we did it.
We did it.
Yay! Episode so 2.5.
2.5. So we really thank you so much for joining us, fellow wizards. We hope this resource is valuable to you. And again, it's not specifically stuff that's only applicable to women. It's definitely going to be stuff that's applicable to everyone. So I hope that, you know, you encourage everybody to listen to this if they're a magician, because we're really going to try our best to talk about things that are valuable to everyone. However, because there exist so few resources specifically for women, every episode we will talk specifically about things that do pertain to women. And we really hope you'll keep the conversation with us going on social media. We have a Facebook page, Shazam on Facebook. We have a Twitter account, and also you can get us on email, shazampod@gmail.com. I don't know how to talk emails, apparently.
I think you're doing great.
Thanks. Thanks for encouraging me. This is a good example of the way that we should support each other as ladies. You're doing great. Speaking of doing great, next episode we're going to be talking about criticism and how to properly critique people. So that will be a wonderful episode for you guys to tune into as well.
That's my favorite segue. Speaking of doing great, we're going to talk about telling people how bad they are. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think our criticism episode will have a lot of stuff in there that maybe you haven't heard before. Kayla and I are both digging into our bag of information from two very different sides. I'm digging in from visual art, and she's digging in from improv. And we might have a special guest.
Yes.
That sound is the sound of me clapping. Yay!
Thanks. We'll add in a sound effect of applause.
I love it.
Cool. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.